Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin, joined with tonight with Trey Patterson. How's it going, Trey?
What's happening, man? Let's do this.
Oh, yeah. Sunday night, man. One of my favorite shows. Hope you had a good weekend. I hope all the listeners out there had a good weekend.
Yeah, just to let everybody know, Tarvin, hit us up on Facebook, on Twitter, and if you got anything on the chat room, we're on Blog Talk Radio, Tarvino, on the chat room. So you can hit us all three ways with a question, or if you want to talk about something, you want to get your opinion on the air, all three of those ways, we'll get to us. We're live on all three of them right now.
So how's the chat room looking? We have anybody in there at this time?
Right now it's empty.
Okay, it usually is for the first couple minutes when people start coming in. The call-in number, let me go ahead and give that, 646-716-5564. And we do have an event-packed show tonight. We are going to talk some NFL football. We're going to break down the NFC Central Division. That's a very interesting division, and we just want to see who the listeners think is going to win this division. Who's that surprise team in the Central that could win this? And we're going to break down Texas A&M entering their first season in the SEC, Trey. That's a tall order coming from the Big 12, and when you're losing a lot of players to come play in the SEC West. So we're going to break that down, talk a little Major League Baseball, and then really just whatever the listeners want to talk about. Hopefully touch a little bit on recruiting. So let's just not waste any time. One last time, the number is 646-716-5564. Trey, the second half of baseball is underway. And, you know, after the All-Star game Tuesday night, do you see anything in the second half that the listeners out there need to watch out for in general?
You know, Carmen, to me, the interesting thing about baseball in the second half is you have some players who seem to just basically have two complete different seasons in the second half. So there's going to be a lot of those guys who have those second-half heroics. I think one of the things you're going to see is you're going to see Detroit make a big move. They're 3.5 games back of the White Sox right now. I think Detroit's going to win that division. The Yankees seem to be running away with the East. But, you know, I think the Angels are going to get back into it in the West is something else to watch for. I think the Angels-Rangers are going to be going down to the wire in that division as well.
Yeah, the AL East, usually this time of season, the Yankees are back several games, and they usually make that second-half push. I wonder how they're going to play with an 8-game lead going into this second half. Well, Baltimore is there. Boston's still around at 9.5. Tampa's 8.5 out. Do you see anybody in that division that can catch New York?
Right now, I don't. Boston's got too many problems going on. I think Boston will get better. You know, Baltimore, I just don't see having the team this year to go ahead and compete at the near the end. And Tampa just, unfortunately for me, is just a pathetically sort of anemic hitting team. I mean, they look awful, Tarvin. I mean, I don't know if you saw in the game yesterday, but they lost today to Boston. But they ended up scoring two runs to actually end up winning that game. They had one official at-bat in the inning. So, I mean, that's manufacturing runs. It's great. But when you have one official at-bat in an inning, and it was actually a strikeout, they were able to score two runs, but that just kind of gives you a picture of how terrible their offense is. I mean, they're starting a DH, whether it's Luke Scott or Hideki Matsui, who neither one any of those guys they put at DH are hitting under 200. So, I mean, that's just a terrible DH position they have. Unless they can go out and get a bat, I think Tampa's probably not going to make the postseason right now. I know that they're contending for that other wild card, so they have a shot with that, Tarvin. But they don't have a shot at winning the division. So the wild card is still within their grasp, but they need a bat.
Yeah, I think Boston has a shot to maybe slip in that wild card or Tampa. I mean, it just depends on Boston's pitching. They have to get a lot of it. But losing Kevin Youkilis to the White Sox, and I agree with you 100% on Detroit. I really think they're going to win that division. It just seems to me, Trey, they have too many second-half players on that Detroit team. And you're only 3.5 games up on them. You know Verlander, he's lights out the second half. Prince Fielder is going to catch fire. Miguel Cabrera is a second-half player. But I just don't – do you see any shot that the White Sox can hold on to this lead with Youkilis on the team, or do you think it's just too much?
I think the White Sox are going to be around for a while. I mean, you know, with Chris Sale and Jake Peavy, actually, and Chris Sale has been phenomenal. He pitched a gem today against the Royals as well. So the White Sox are going to be around for sure. But for me, you know, the real big factor I see in that race, Tarvin, is it really boils down to Brennan Bosch for the Tigers, because the rest of the guys, I mean, they haven't been first half slumping by any means. I mean, they haven't hit as well as they can, but I mean, they've still been pulling their weight. I mean, you look at some of their numbers, and they're not exactly numbers that you go, whoa, that's not right. But you look at Brennan Bosch, and they expected far more out of him, and he has just been awful. So if he starts coming around and hits around 280, 290, maybe 10 home runs, 10, you know, the rest of the way, then the rest of the offense is going to click a lot better. And I think that's where Detroit starts making up some serious game on the White Sox. But I think the White Sox are going to be around, Herman.
Yeah, I think they'll be around and you know, possibly hit that second wild card, first or second wild card. I just think the Central, you know, those two teams are good. Kevin Youkilis is really a factor on the White Sox now. I knew Trey when he left, you know, Bobby Valentine, all that garbage with him. You know, Kevin Youkilis shut down after that happened, and as soon as he went to Chicago, he's starting to tear the cover off the ball. So it'll be interesting to see how Chicago holds this lead. 3.5 games, you know as well as I do, when you play as head-to-head as much as they do, you know, all it takes is getting swept, and all of a sudden you're in second place. So in the American League West, you know, it's a little closer than I thought. I really thought Texas would jump out on this division and stay, but with just a 5-game lead and Pujols hitting, do you think Texas is going to hold on to this lead and win the division?
You know, I thought going into this, you know, when we get our preseason predictions that the Angels were going to be a really tough team this year, and they've kind of struggled in an identity. I mean, there's some guys on that team who've clearly not played up to the level that I thought. I mean, I thought Howie Kendrick would be hitting around 330. I mean, he's hitting more like 260. You know, Kendry Morales has been slow to come back, and I know he was out for an entire, you know, almost two seasons. But that raw power that he had before he broke his leg hasn't come back either. So, you know, Pujols is struggled, but I think a lot of that, to be honest, Tarvin, for the Angels is really protection for Pujols. You got so many guys hitting around Pujols who are hitting 260, 250, 240. They're not exactly threats. And so, you know, people have been able to show Pujols some nasty stuff, pitch outside the zone to him. And that's really not fair for, you know, Pujols does not have the kind of protection I think he misses in St. Louis with Matt Holliday and Lance Berkman. So I think that if those guys get better, Tarvin, you're going to see the Angels make up some ground very quickly. But they got pitching problems as well. I mean, C.J. Wilson hasn't been, I mean, he's been okay to me. But, you know, Ervin Santana's like 4-9 this year. And Tarvin, that just can't stay for the Angels to make a run. I mean, he's a key guy in that pitching rotation.
Yeah, and he's a key guy on my fantasy team as well, which is not doing very well this year. So I'm out of the playoffs for the first time in a long time, so we'll just work on next year. But I'm with you. I think Texas is going to hold on to this, but I think the Angels will make a wild card push and get in that wild card. But, you know, Albert Pujols is about to go on a tear. So I'm interested to see how they stack up with Texas. It's just after that, Oakland's starting to fall away now. Seattle's never been in it. So let's move over to the National League, the East, probably the best division in the National League. You have Washington sitting at the top of that, 51-35. The Braves coming on strong, 3 games back, I believe. The thing is, the Braves have won 7 games in a row, 8 of their last 10, but the only problem is the Nationals have won 7 out of 10. So it's just not making up any ground. And is Washington good enough, Trey, to hold on to a lead and beat a team like the Braves that seems to be in a playoff run every season?
Well, you know, Tarvin, it's going to be interesting because the Braves are going to start feeling a lot of pressure come late August, early September, because of that just catastrophic collapse last year. And, you know, players can tell you all the right things. They can say, we're playing for chippers last year, you know, this means more, whatever. They can say all the right things, Tarvin, but in the back of a lot of those guys' minds, it's going to be, you know, we can't do what we did last year. And if they're even looking at maybe a 2 or 1 game back from the Nationals, that's even more pressure because, you know, they blew a huge lead last year. They were up. They had that cushion. Well, this year, I'm not so sure that going into the September stretch, they're going to have any cushion. I think they're going to be chasing the Nationals or they're going to be right there with them. You know, and don't forget, you know, the Mets are playing pretty well. The Marlins made a move for Carlos Lee. The Phillies are getting, you know, Cliff Lee and Halliday back. You know, they got Ryan Howard and Unley back, so they're getting strong. So this East is going to be kind of hard to get through the schedule going down when they start playing each other again. So, you know, Tarvin, I think it's going to be close. I think the Braves, I think they're going to get into the wild card. But who wins this division, man, Tarvin? Flip a coin. What do you think?
Well, first of all, about Philadelphia, they are starting to get the key pieces back. But, you know, if they were seven games out, I would say watch out for them. But they're 14 games out of first place. I don't think anybody's ever come back from 14 games down, have they, on the second half. That's just a lot to make up.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot to make up for sure. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I don't know the Phillies are going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to cause enough trouble, though.
Yeah, they will cause a lot of trouble because I still see the Mets being a player, you know, when it comes down towards the end of the season, as well as Washington and Atlanta. So whoever draws the Phillies that last couple of weeks, you know, the Phillies would like nothing more than to knock somebody out of the playoffs, especially after underachieving this year with injuries. So
yeah.
I do think the winner of this division, though, to make the playoffs is probably the favorite to go to the World Series. Because you have Cincinnati in the Central, them and Pittsburgh are almost dead locked right now in the Central.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a great race. And then you still have St. Louis, Trey. Do you think St. Louis can come back and win this division?
Absolutely. I mean, they still have pretty much the same core. I mean, I know Pujols is gone. But, I mean, the heroes of the playoffs from last year, you know, David Freese, you know, those type of guys are playing at a high level. I mean, David Freese is now an all-star in the all-star team this year. You know, Alan Craig, who had such a great, good World Series, has been injured at some point during the season. He's back. I mean, they have some of their pitching coming back. You know, Wainwright's been pitching pretty well. You know, they have their share of injuries, Tarvin, but I don't think you can count them out because they came from over 10 back in a month of September alone to basically get in the playoffs last year and actually win it. So, to me, this division is going to be very tight the whole way through between three teams. I don't know that Milwaukee gets back into it. I think they're going to fall out. So I think it's going to be St. Louis, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati. And ultimately, I think Pittsburgh is going to be the one who loses out to that. I just don't know that they have enough to make through the entire season this year. But although they've been showing me no signs right now that says they can't. What do you think about old Pittsburgh, Tarvin?
Yeah, I don't think they have enough to do it. I would love to see Pittsburgh win that division, but Andrew McCutcheon's just not enough. And Cincinnati, you know how they play at home, how good they are. Their pitching is not too bad. St. Louis is one of those teams. They know how to play towards the end of the season. You saw what they did to Atlanta last year, the lead that they came back on. So I think St. Louis at the end of the day wins this division. I'm going to put them in the Central. I just don't think Cincinnati seems like to me they'll choke. So until they prove otherwise, I'm going to pick St. Louis in this division. And that moves us on to the West. It's a good race with San Francisco and the Dodgers. The Dodgers were up big at the first of the season, but with injuries, but that's your best players, it's just hard to continue to win games. And they've lost, four of their last 10. They've won four out of their last 10 games. So that's not going to cut it. San Francisco with a 1.5-game lead, Trey. I think the pitching for San Francisco will be the difference to get them in the playoffs. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, even with Kent back now, even with Ethier back now, the Dodgers are still – they to me, suffer from the same ailment that the Tampa Rays have. And that's a bat. That's a bat from lineup to drive and runs. You know, of course, the Dodgers have Matt Kemp, you know, and the Rays have Longoria, who's no timetable back for him. But I think the Dodgers have to go out and get some sort of bat to give them – you know, something to boost them over the edge. If not, I think you're right. You know, San Francisco seems to have that clutch hitting like they did during their title year. Their pitching, of course, has been great, minus Tim Lincecum, which who knows what's going on with him. I think he's injured, Tarvin. I mean, I don't know any other way why his fastball has dropped, you know, 2 miles an hour almost each year. He's down to about 89, which is well below his 94, 95, where he was hitting back in his Cy Young days. So it's something wrong with him. But, you know, Matt Cain – And then Bumgarner has been phenomenal. So they do have two guys at the top of that rotation who are really hard to beat. And with Billingsworth now, you know, for the Dodgers going out with an injury and Don Mattingly saying that he's got some sort of, you know, arm injury going on, you know, I don't know that Clayton Kershaw can pull that whole thing by himself. So, to me, I think you're right, Tarvin. I think the Giants are going to pull out of this division and run away a little bit with it.
Yeah, and Lance will come back on him. There is something wrong. You don't just keep losing velocity like that. I started seeing that with Holiday, with his speed and his control, accuracy. So there's something wrong there, and they just need to fix it now. I mean, this is something you might want to shelve him just to see, because I don't think the Dodgers are going to actually make too much of a push. I'd like to see him get a couple more games lead, maybe just rest Lincecum just to see if that'll help, because he should be adult enough to say, hey, coach, there's something wrong here, because some of these pitchers just don't want to come out of the game. So, anyway, baseball will be in full force. The only thing bad about baseball, Trey, is it runs right into football. So when the World Series is on, football is having some great games, college football, NFL football. You think there's ever a chance they can change when the World Series is?
Yeah, I think, to me, what I'd like to see is more of a playoff time. More playoffs in baseball, and maybe even at the even if it meant cutting some of the season back. That's to me what I'd like to see. I love the fact we're going to wild cards. I would love to see the wild card series be a 5-game series. So to me, I like about where it is, but it is getting a little late. You can't push November for baseball. I think baseball should be wrapping up at the beginning of October. I mean, you know, the fall classic. You know, I like baseball around that period when it starts getting cooler. But to me, that's what I'd like to see is more playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't mind to see that either. So shifting gears off baseball real quick, just want to touch on a little recruiting. Reuben Foster, big linebacker, we touched on that a little bit the other night, signed with Auburn, decommitted from Alabama. And that's a big deal in the state of Alabama in college football. And I'm going to bring in Ian Bird. He's from Should Jordan Parkway Radio in Auburn. I want to get his take on this. How are you doing, Ian?
Good, Tarvino. How about you, buddy?
Oh, doing great.
Good, man.
Thanks for coming on and sharing with us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me on, man. It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, brother.
Well, some news that shook the world, especially in the SEC this past week. Reuben Foster, a year commit to Alabama, decommit. And now with the Tigers, and to top it all off, he gets a tattoo on his arm of Auburn. So tell me what it's like in Auburn right now. What's the vibe going on?
I think the tattoo really solidified the questions that obviously followed the commitment. Obviously, the games that has been played with Alabama and Auburn the past couple of years. I mean, even when it went back to Jonathan Atchison, I think in 2009, maybe 2010, he was a switch commit. To Alabama, and I don't think you've heard his name, obviously, since he committed and signed there. But the Reuben Foster switch is so huge. I mean, this is, to me, bigger than even the T.J. Yeldon switch last year for loss of Auburn and gain for Auburn, because the Auburn running back position is so thick, but linebacker is such a question spot. I think when he moved to Auburn High School, though, and the time that he spent at the athletic department, it's not as big of a surprise inside the Auburn circle, as you know, I'm sure. But I think it's newsworthy, and it's probably the biggest recruiting story of the season, unless something else big changes.
So looking at the recruiting now for Auburn, I know, Foster had a lot of friends that they agreed. I know four-star Trey Matthews, a safety, is committed to Georgia. Do you think it's a good chance that he comes on over to Auburn?
I do. I mean, there's been numerous interviews that Trey Matthews has made where he has said, we will play college football together. And he always said it wouldn't be at Alabama. I mean, I believe he answered that question outright. It won't be Alabama that we play together at. So that is something that I think is definitely a door open. I think pretty much anything at this point, with the way that Chizik and his staff have been able to accumulate recruits and build their recruiting acumen the past few seasons, I think any door is open, no matter who's committed where and how talented that kid is. And I really think that bringing on Brian Van Gorder did wonders for the Auburn defensive recruiting. I think that was probably the biggest thing that solidified Auburn to get Reuben Foster. I mean, that was the biggest argument Nick Saban had, was I have NFL experience. But, of course, if it were me, I would say you have terrible NFL experience. So what are you proving? You're not good at it, right? But,
yeah.
You know, Van Gorder proved that he could build a defense, even in Atlanta, that was somewhat questionable. They were young, and they performed above expectations. So I think bringing him in, that NFL edge, I think defensively Auburn's recruiting is at an all-time high, and it's just going to continue to fly.
So, you know, a lot of the Alabama – I don't know if you heard the interview. I think his name was Copeland. He used to play for Alabama back in 92. I'm sure you have heard of him. But he said that Auburn paid more money to Foster than Alabama did. Did you hear that comment?
I've heard the comment mentioned. I haven't actually seen the quote or heard it directly, no. But, you know, the money comments is something that I'm surprised the first pivot, to be honest with you, Tarvino, was not, we didn't want him anyway. That's usually the first pivot that they make. But obviously the money, he's such a highly touted guy that the money pivot's the next one. What a stupid comment from a guy that knows how serious any kind of accusation like that is being looked at by the NCAA, especially with the Miami scandal, the North Carolina scandal, all these things that have happened. But a former player from a university saying something like that. But, I mean, of course, we know in the early 90s, payments were happening, and there were issues with agents and things at Bama anyway. So, I mean, maybe he's used to the payments. I'm not really sure. But I think that's just an off-the-cuff, stupid comment by somebody trying to cause a fluster because they're irritated with a shift they didn't expect, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's the arrogance of Alabama players and fans in general, like, who is this guy to switch on us? Why would he go to Auburn? And just looking at it, people don't realize how exciting Auburn is right now. And Chizik's taken that program with the same coaching staff, really, with the exception of Van Gorder. And he's just – all he's done is recruit top 10 classes every year he's been at Auburn while Alabama's been successful. That's amazing.
Yeah. No, the level of excitement and I've mentioned it in our show before, the way that Chizik has made a uniqueness out of Auburn and separated Auburn from Alabama in this state and in the SEC scene is what has set him apart, I think. You know, for so long, even when you hear famous Auburn people like David Housel talk about Auburn-Alabama rivalry, they still carry this Bama's the big brother mentality. And Chizik doesn't. Chizik carries, we're Auburn. Auburn's been here a very long time, has been playing football a very long time, has been very successful, and we're going to continue to grow that. And I think that he separates it from, you know, where other coaches or other, even fans, are always looking across the state at what's happening. We're more worried sometimes about what the opponent is doing than what our team is doing in regards to fandom, and it's really bad in Alabama, as you know. I think Chizik's changing that. Auburn people and the nation in general are now looking at Auburn for Auburn, not at Auburn in response to what Alabama's done, as it has been in the past, in my perception.
I think Reuben Foster signing with us is going to be the turning point that, you know, Nick Saban's done a great job at Alabama, winning games and recruiting. But I think now with this recruit, and I might be wrong, but I think it's going to start shifting in Auburn's direction now, to where if you look at the state of Alabama, they've won the state battle already, and I think they've won it last year possibly, and they have three of the top eight players in the country right now on this roster.
Yeah. Yeah, last season, you're right, last season Auburn did have more recruits from the state of Alabama that were highly ranked than Alabama did. They did win that battle, and like you said, they're going to win that battle again this year as well. You know, the way that Gene Chizik, and I wrote an article about it for Bleacher Report, the way Gene Chizik has gone about recruiting, the way that he's changed the mentality, it's not a fit for everybody. I don't think it is a fit for every player in the country, because not every player in the country wants to come to the type of environment that he is in building and has built and is engaging at Auburn. But the mixture of the character and talent that he is bringing into this program is the best I've ever seen since I've been alive, honestly. And I think that it's going to continue to grow. And I think that people underestimate the difference of time that Saban and Chizik have had as a head coach. I mean, there's a massive difference decades between the amount of time they've been head coaches. So Chizik is really at the beginning stages of a what looks to be a very good, lengthy head coaching career, where Nick Saban is arguably at the point where, I mean, he's at kind of the mid-level. He's not too old. He's middle-aged, but he's been in the game for a while, and he's not going to, you know, the head coaching days of Bobby Petrino, not Bobby Petrino, excuse me, obviously his are over, Bobby Bowden and things like that, where you stay at schools forever, I think that's over. So I think Gene Chizik, that's the other piece, is that the excitement comes from the newness that he brings to the table. And it's just a great environment. I mean, why would you not want to come to Auburn as an 18-year-old? That's, to me, is the question that's unanswerable. When you look at the program that Alabama runs and the way it's ran, you look at the way that Auburn runs its program, I just don't see why you wouldn't want to come to Auburn. It's fun. You win. It's a great environment. The school's phenomenal. The area has grown exponentially in the past decade. I think Gene Chizik and the school have done a lot to draw in recruits.
Yeah, Trey, you want to add anything on that?
Yeah, we got some chat on the message board about this. One of the folks in the chat board said that Reuben Foster chose Auburn simply because he knows the depth chart at Auburn is very thin, and he's guaranteed to start and play immediately. At Alabama, he's a second or third stringer until maybe his junior year at the top of the tier. So that's some of the folks at the chat room are talking about why Reuben Foster did what he did. And I just want to note, Tarvin, on recruiting, you know, Auburn is obviously, you know, bringing themselves up into a top tier. But I don't know if I would go in the realm and saying that they're out recruiting Alabama just because in state, because Alabama can recruit in the states that matter, and that's Texas and Florida. And actually, Alabama right now is ranked 8th, according to Rivals, and Auburn's 11. So, you know, there is, and I'm not a Bama fan, not an Auburn fan, but Alabama is still pulling the recruits they really, you know, a lot of the recruits they want. They lost this kid, but there seem to be getting plenty of others.
Well, Trey, I agree with you in a way, but in order to be, you know, to beat Alabama in recruiting, you, first of all, you have to win your own state. And that's the main thing Chizik looks at. There's a lot of talent in Alabama. It might not be like Florida or Texas, but in order to be the man, you have to win your recruiting battle in state. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Alabama is definitely known for its recruits. And I think there was actually an article breakdown by either the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times that showed states per capita per recruit. And Alabama's in the top 5 of state production for D1 talent players. I mean, the state of Alabama is a talent pool. You have to own the state of Alabama, and it turns into a perception is reality type deal. It's the perceived understanding that now Auburn or Gene Chizik or the program at Auburn is the lead dog in the pack in Alabama, in the state is what I mean by that. Then you start growing even your and we know this, the fan bases in the state of Alabama are tilted. I mean, there's more Bama fans than there are Auburn fans. But that's come with the history that's been built. And I think recruiting has become such a public part of the game that the more you get this type of stuff where it's positive to Auburn, the more recruits that you know, like I said last year, I think Auburn out of the top Southeast, the top 18 in state, I think Auburn got 5, Alabama got 4. You continue to do those things, it grows on a bigger level. See, Auburn traditionally, their big hotbed is actually Georgia. And they pull a lot of their talent from Georgia and Florida as well. And another place that they're starting to pull is the Northeast. Who would have thought we'd have kids from Maryland? You've got guys from Delaware that are committing. So I really think that Chizik is doing the Saban. And Saban's done things right, don't get me wrong. I mean, he's won games. He's recruited the great talent for a reason. But Chizik's using that, and he's tweaking it to his style. And I think that his style is a better answer, and that's why I think he's starting to lead the pack. And Saban is a flustered guy. We know that. You've seen him on the sideline. And losing this recruit flustered that guy. There's no doubt in my mind he flipped out when this happened. No doubt in my mind. And that is where I think fans will catch on to.
Ian, you know, the guy in the chat room, I don't know who said it, talked about, you know, he would be third string in Alabama. I don't think I think Foster would play rather quick at Alabama. I think he's good. He would, and I mean, Auburn is not deep, Trey, at linebacker, and that is a good point that he might have chosen. I think he's ready to to put Auburn back on the map. I think, you know, everybody's watching Alabama dominate. I think it might be, you know, people are tired of it, want to see a change. And where else to do it than the team that hates Alabama the most? And
yeah,
to Auburn
no,
and do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's no argument that, Alabama has a deeper talent pool at the linebacker position, but then you can also argue that they run a 3-4 defense versus a 4-3 where you need more depth. So, therefore, his option and opportunity to play would be actually better at Alabama. So, I mean, there's different ways you could really look at it. You could also point to C.J. Mosley starting as a freshman, or not starting, but getting ample playing time as a freshman, and there's no doubt Foster is on that level. And you also have guys like Chris Frost, who's a 5-star that will play outside linebacker for Auburn this year. So Auburn does have a little bit less depth to pull from, but there's talent in that depth. So I think Foster will see the field early. I don't think he's going to start right away, you know, because I think there is that type of talent at Auburn already at linebacker. It's just thin. But I think the depth argument is a little bit, like you said, I think he would play at Alabama regardless. I think the depth argument, again, is just another – you know, that a smoke and mirrors kind of move. Oh, he just wouldn't play it right away. Well, I disagree. I'm with you on that one.
And, you know, this is probably the best recruit Auburn has had that I can remember. I mean, you know, I go back, I'm 35, but you remember a recruit that was number 2 overall in the country that signed with Auburn?
No, not at all. The highest rated recruit that I can remember Auburn getting, man.
Was it Cadillac?
Either Cadillac or Greg Smith, but Greg Smith never made it to campus.
Well, Carter, wasn't Dyer one of the top 10 overall player?
Dyer was a top 10. Yeah, I forgot about Dyer.
And he's no longer on your roster, right?
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, he transferred to where?
Arkansas State.
Okay, I knew he transferred somewhere.
Yeah, and you look at Auburn, like last year with no 5-star athlete, you know, and this year they have 3 already, and I think USC is the only team with 3. But when you sign 3 of the top 8 players in the country and they're all on defense, that should send a message to the rest of the SEC showing what Auburn's future plans are to get good on defense, you know. And I don't see that much. When Tuberville was there, it was – you know, a lot of 3-stars. We might get a 4-star if we're lucky or two. But, you know, and Auburn was successful back then. So now you're going to put talent on Auburn and you're going to keep a consistent coaching base. It's good. I really think the future is real bright right now, guys. And I think this is going to be a top 3 class this season when it's all said and done. And I'm looking at top 5 classes for probably the next few years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you look at the rankings right now, I mean, Auburn, and I'm looking at a 247 board right now. Alabama's the number 1 class with 17. You go down and you find Auburn at number 8 with 16 total commitments. The next, you know, you got Georgia, LSU, Notre Dame, and Michigan, all with more recruits total than Auburn, and Auburn is at number 8. So they're definitely going to climb those rankings as they pick off a few more guys and pick up a few more commitments. As these other teams begin to fill up, and of course we know the roster management rules have been in place and things like that, so there's a lot of issues around oversigning that make these numbers more true than they used to be. I mean, it used to be when signing day happened, you get a class that had 43 in it, and all of a sudden they shoot up, you know. But I think you're right. Auburn's got a steady climb, and they're probably going to steady climb to the top 5 if they continue on the way they're going. I mean, with the Khalil Rogers, folks like that seem to be on board somewhat, definitely with the option of Auburn. Auburn's definitely got a bright future in the recruiting game.
Well, Ian, getting closer to football, I really would like to have you back on to discuss, you know, once the camp gets back in, or actually anytime you want to call back in, we'd love to have you. But I really appreciate you coming on tonight and sharing.
Oh, definitely. Thanks, Brian, for having me, man. Anytime, you guys are also welcome to join our show. We'd love to have you over there. We've had you before, and it's always a good time. Really looking forward to football season, man. if you get up here, give me a shout.
I definitely will, Ian. And I appreciate your show's on Tuesday night, Thursday, and
Tuesdays,
Sunday.
Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. Yes, sir. Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sunday.
Yeah, 6 Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, Shug Jordan Parkway. It's a great show. Everybody, make sure you check them out. And thanks again, Ian.
Hey, thanks, Tarvino. You have a good night, man. Great show,
you
buddy.
Too. was a great call. Talk a little recruiting and college. And Trey, we're going to get back to college in a few minutes with when we break down Texas A&M, but it's time to talk some NFL for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, first of all, and Sonny, if you're out there, be more than welcome to call in. Sonny Clark from Couch Potato is going to hopefully join us if he can.
He's on the message
Drew
board.
Brees. Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Drew Brees, what a contract. Were you expecting a contract this size, Trey?
Yeah, I was expecting top three for sure, as in, you know, quarterback pay. I'm not surprised, to be honest, Harvin. I saw an interesting stat, and I don't know what the viewers think of this. I know NFL is different than the NBA, but it says that basically Drew Brees made the same contract that I can't remember the player now. It's some scrub NBA player just got, like some, you know, B starter. So, I mean, when you put it in perspective, other sports, NFL players don't even make as much as NBA players. I know there's, you know, a lot more NFL players than NBA players, but still. Putting it in perspective, Drew Brees earned it, Jarvan, and I think he's worth every penny.
Yeah, why do NFL players make less than NBA players?
I think you have 60 of them on the roster, and you know, you got to pay more than the 12 you got to pay for the NBA.
Yeah, that's a good point. But, Pitt, what is it, 5 years, $100 million, and I think this is the biggest contract ever, correct?
Yeah, I mean, as in guaranteed money, I think the only other player who's getting, I think, what is it, $60 million of it guaranteed, which is of course, Megatron out there in Detroit. So, you know, definitely a lot of money guaranteed.
All right. Well, Trey, I'm going to bring Sonny on the line, and I'm sure he wants to touch on this Drew Brees. How's it going, Sonny?
I'm doing good. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, doing great. How was the IFL Championship last night?
Oh, it was fun. It's always a kick, and you get an opportunity, and we did. We got the opportunity. College championship came, and, you know, I don't think it matters what level it's on, whether it be high school, whether it be college or minor league things. It's always be exciting to be a part of something that's considered the championship, so that's kind of cool.
Well, what do you think of this Drew Brees contract?
Well, you know, I'll be honest. how much of that was guaranteed? Just to throw that, and make sure my brain is not right.
I think it's $60 million.
Yeah,
$60 million guaranteed.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
So if they keep him, let's just put it this way: if they keep him at $60 million, if they keep him for 4 years, they got him for a bargain.
Yep.
I mean, really, if you think about it, I mean, let's be honest. I love Drew Brees, and the fact of the matter is, I think he's probably one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback in the NFL, depending on what you believe or how you believe. He's definitely top five, and sometimes 1, 2, 3, or 4. I just think that it was a great deal for the Saints. Take away the fact that they got all the bounty gate and everything going on. The fact of the matter is they stole him. When we get to talking about football, it's all about guaranteed money. You know, just putting it down and getting there, it's about guaranteed money. And it's a $60 million contract. But because let's be honest, the other $40 million, that's probably not going to be ending up in his wallet via the Saints anyway. Maybe by somebody else that will give him another guaranteed contract or whatever the case may be. But that's one thing I don't like about the NFL contracts. But the guaranteed money, it's what it is. And if they keep him for 5 years, they stole this guy out from underneath all the other teams that might be looking for a quarterback. But let's be honest, I don't think anybody really expected to see Drew Brees in any other uniform other than the Saints because of their situation, what's going on. If they don't have Drew Brees in a uniform, guess what? That stadium is not going to be as full as it normally is, especially after all the situations that's been going on over there.
I totally agree with you, Sonny. Trey, what do you think about the contract? Do you really agree with it? I know you said he earned it, but do you think he's a benefit of the offense ran at New Orleans?
No, I think
a little. Okay, go ahead.
I think there's no doubt, Tarvin, that, that Drew Brees is a top-tier quarterback. I mean, it wasn't like he was, a terrible player while he was with the Chargers. He actually put up really good numbers there as well. Obviously, any great quarterback needs a good system to, you know, allow him to pass and throw the ball around. I mean, if Sean Payton wanted to hand the ball off 50 times a game, then Drew Brees wouldn't put up 400 yards a game. So, you know, part of it is the system, of course, but part of it is Drew Brees has talent. He knows how to read defenses, and, you know, when it comes time to read the seam down the middle, I mean, he's there. I mean, he's a great, you know, precision passer when he needs to be. So I think Drew Brees is top tier, no doubt. I have no problems with the contract whatsoever.
Okay. I think also Drew Brees makes, if you take a look at the team on the Saints, Drew Brees is a Peyton Manning type of quarterback. And what I mean is not because they have the same passing style, is he makes your average player very, very good. If you take a look at what Peyton Manning has done with some of the players that he had on his team, if they didn't have a Peyton Manning or somewhere up to that standard, you're not going to get the same benefit from a DeVry Henderson. You're not going to get the same benefit from a Marcus Colston. You know, and the other four or five guys that he throws the ball to on many occasions, those guys who are not, you know, in the starting lineup that will end up going someplace else and get the benefit of Drew Brees. So if you're a wide receiver for the New Orleans Saints and you're maybe second or third tier, you're loving the fact he's there, because what he does is he makes other players a lot better than what they really are in reality, because of his precision passing and because of his accuracy and because of the actual offense that's ran down in New Orleans. Now the question will be, what kind of numbers is he going to put up next year, because this defense is shot now. So he's going to have to throw the football to win. The running the football is probably not going to be happening. So if you're a wide receiver in New Orleans, you're happy to see Drew Brees right there.
Hey, Sonny, well, what kind of effort do you think he'll give now? Do you think there'll be any animosity towards the Saints organization for, like, slow playing him, maybe waiting so long to give him that money?
Well, I have a theory. When someone's going to give you $60 million, you can't really be too mad at them. You know, you can call me all the names in the book. I don't care, but you know, $60 million. It's a good contract, fair contract. $60 million. I think I kiss his grandbabies. I might even get down and kiss his big toe with the ward on it for $60 million. You know, $60 million in money has a tendency to make friends out of people who are not necessarily friends or have a problem with each other. Money definitely changes that attitude, and you'll hear it too. He's going to be happy to be a Saint, and they're happy to have him back, and they may hate each other, but the fact of the matter is, if they do, it's no big deal. It'll never get put out there, because when you got $60 million lying in your pocket for the next probably 4 years of business, you're a pretty happy guy anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree. Hey, Sonny, would you like to stay on with us and break down the NFC Central?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about the NFC Central. Let's do it.
All right, Trey Patterson, you up? When you look at this division, what jumps out at you the most with these four teams?
We're talking about the NFC Central, sorry. You mean the North, right? The Green Bay division.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, Charvin, I think what jumps out at you, Charvin, is you know how dominant Green Bay was last year in the division. They were 6-0. Minnesota was 0-6, so and then Detroit and Chicago kind of split the baby there. So, Tarvin, I think that in this division, I think Green Bay is still the king. I don't know. They're not going to go 15-1. I think more like 13-3 this year. I think Detroit and Chicago are going to be right there at the 10-win mark. Both those teams are probably going to be vying for a playoff spot. And I think Minnesota actually improves from their 3 wins to about 5 or 6. I think having Adrian Peterson out is going to hurt them, but Ponder's going to be a little bit more successful. So I think 5 wins for the Vikings. I got Chicago and Detroit at 10 each, and Green Bay at 13.
Sonny?
Well, when I look at the Central, of course, you can't deny what the Green Bay Packers have done for the last 3 years, and they're just going to continue to do it again. When I look at the other teams in the division, I don't look at them as superpowers anymore, especially after this offseason. Look at what the Detroit Lions have been dealing in this offseason. That will undoubtedly go into the season. I'm just a believer in this because Jim Schwartz, as much as I love him, was losing his team at some point during the season last year. Although they threw for everything and, you know, the success of the quarterback and Stafford, I think the off-the-field problems are going to leak into the locker rooms and cause problems for the Detroit Lions, whether it's, you know, suspensions, because Roger Goodell's not done, okay? It just hasn't gotten to them yet, so there could be some suspensions to be going down. They've had so many arrests. I'd like to keep it on the field when I'm looking at football teams, but this team had such an awful offseason off the field that there's no way it's not going to affect them. And I've said this on my show, and I've got emails up the yin-yang, but I'm going to tell you right now, Jay Cutler is one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL. If this guy ever had an offensive line in Chicago, they probably would have made the playoffs or moved farther into the playoffs or maybe even to a Super Bowl, for crying out loud. They needed to do something on that offensive line. Now, granted, they go out and grab up a Brandon Marshall. That's a step in the right direction because they didn't have really anybody to throw the football to. But if you're not going to keep Jay Cutler vertical, that's going to be a problem for the Chicago Bears. So they figured out max protection. Well, they got max protection, but they need to get the bodies in order to make the max protection to be more effective going into this season. I think they were going to make some moves to make that happen. When I look at that division, I'm liking Chicago in the second position, and the Lions, you know, they're going to learn a lot about discipline off the field when it's the off season on the field this year, and it's going to be one of those. Minnesota is not going to do anything. I'm not a big believer in Christian Ponder at the quarterback position. Matter of fact, I think he just kind of stinks, and they've got to do something in order to figure out what will make his talent show. But my personal opinion, Leslie Frazier as the head coach of that football team was the biggest mistake that team went to, because that guy got down on his knees so much to kiss Brett Favre's butt when he was there. He showed his true colors, which is not really a true head coach in the NFL. I see him at 3 or 4 wins this year, even with Christian Ponder might have a halfway decent season.
Hey, Sonny, can you call right back in? I think we're getting a lot of static. Is there any way you can call right back in while I'm talking about mine?
Yeah, go ahead, and I might call back in about 15 minutes, okay? It might be my phone, and I got...
Oh, my bad. He cut out. Sonny, if you're listening, I apologize. I accidentally cut you off, so sorry about that. Trey, are you still on?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had a lot of static from him. I think he had a bad connection, I think.
Yeah, and Sonny, I didn't mean to hang up on you, bud, and I know you know that. So anyway, going back to this division, you know, everybody was high on Detroit last year, and I did predict them to make the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. But looking at this, I don't think they really did anything to help their running game any. And before Detroit can be a contender, in my mind, Trey, they have to be able to run the football. And Best is just not good enough. You know, he's just not good enough, and that offensive line is not that great either, because Stafford's taken a beating while he's been there. And that's hats off to Stafford for what he's done with that team. But I look at Detroit, I think they're going to finish probably third in that division. I think Minnesota's fourth, of course. But I'm going to say the Bears are going to win this division this season. I think with Cutler getting Jeffrey and just Forte is going to come back and play well, and they have Bush backing him up. What do you think about the Bears, Trey? Is there any shot that I'm right on this?
I think the Bears are going to be competitive. I mean, that's why I got them, you know, at 10 wins this season, which is two wins over last season. I think you're right. I mean, Brandon Marshall is a big addition. I think Forte is really close to signing with the Bears. They're getting that contract very close, and that's a big key component for them. They've gotten better. So they're going better than 8 wins they had last year, for sure. I think 10. I think 11 if they have a really good season. I just think the Packers are a little too tough for them to win the division against the Packers. So, you know, I can give them one other extra win and maybe take the Packers down one. But for me, it's going to be a Packer win for the division.
Well, looking at the Packers, though, Trey, their defense is terrible, man. Just their passing defense last year was dead last in the NFL.
Yeah.
And even against the run, they were 14th. So I just don't think that their defense can hold up in order to win a Super Bowl. So I think Sonny was right when he was talking about Cutler. I think this guy's a little more hungry right now. You know, he's trying to prove his critics wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to look at Chicago, man, and I'm gonna have to go with them just because everybody's on Green Bay this year. So I'm gonna be the wild card here and go with Chicago Bears to win this division. If you look at their schedules, all teams, there's nothing really that jumps out and says, wow, this team has a tougher schedule. Have you noticed anything when you were reviewing their schedules?
No, I think I think Green Bay has a little bit tougher home and away schedule than the Bears do. But you're right. I mean, I don't think any one of these teams play significantly. I mean, I think there's arguments to be made in a couple different ways. But, yeah, I think the schedule is going to work out for basically one of these three teams to come out and actually have a really good season. To me, the Packers are still going to be very tough at home. They were 8-0 last year. We're going to see what kind of, you know, how good Cutler and Chicago can be, I think, by how well they protect their house. They were 5-3 last year, 3-3 on the road. So I think if Chicago really does make that bump, Tarvin, in the division, they're going to have to go 7-1, 8-0 at home to kind of basically put the other teams on notice that, you know, hey, we're a legitimate, you know, contender this year. But yeah, I think Chicago made a couple good pieces, Tarvin, you know, additions to that team that are going to make them very tough this year for sure.
Well, you have Brandon Marshall, but you also added Alshon Jeffrey from South Carolina.
Yeah.
And that's really going to help Cutler out because Alshon Jeffrey was competing with Julio Jones and A.J. Green. He was on that level while, you know, but he struggled last year a little bit more. It looked like he gained a lot of weight, looked a little lazy. But I think this kid is going to come in and make an impact immediately. And I think it's really going to help Cutler, give him another deep target, especially Brandon Marshall. And then you still have Hester. We forget about that kicking game with Hester. How many return for touchdowns is he going to have this year, Trey?
Well, I mean, he's not as good as a punt game as it is on the kickoff. So, to me, I don't think he's going to have one this year, Tarvin. I mean, I think if the NFL were to go back to the rules that I preferred, which is kicking off, and it actually meant something, I can't believe how ridiculous the NFL is in that rule, Tarvin. I can't stand the new rule on kickoffs. It takes a lot of excitement out of the game. So, I don't think Hester gets one this year, Tarvin.
Well, and Hester, that was his specialty, and he could demand getting money for that.
Yeah.
And now he's not been able to get his touches. So we're going to shift gears a little bit, and we will break down every division. And I don't know why I was calling that the Central, Trey.
They used to be the Central. They changed, you know, old habits that are hard, like me calling the Pac-10, when they're actually the Pac-12.
Exactly. That was just the Central to me. It's always the Bears, you know, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to shift gears. We're running out of time. So the last thing we're going to hit on, and if you'd like to call in, 646-716-5564, we're going to touch on some college football with Texas A&M, Trey. First team, I think they were the first team to join the SEC out of them in Missouri, coming to the toughest division of the SEC, the SEC West. What do you think they're going to do, man? Do you think they have any shot of contending at all for this?
For the West title and to make the championship game in the SEC, no. Here, I'm not, the answer is no, Tarvin. It's clear no. But I'll tell you this, Tarvin. Texas A&M in 3 years might be a different story. And the reason is being in the SEC, they're going to start recruiting better and better Texas talent. And if Texas A&M ever wins the Texas recruiting battle, and right now, you know, they lose to just about everybody in Texas. I mean, Texas, Oklahoma, you know, basically recruits better. I mean, other SEC schools have been going into Texas and sort of rating it as well. So if Texas A&M can start winning some of those recruits because they're in the SEC, Texas A&M could be a huge powerhouse because they already play really well at home, which is one of the keys to being good in the SEC. You know, they've always been a little bit more defensive minded than some of the other Big 12 teams were, like, you know, like Texas, like the Red Raiders and, you know, Texas themselves. So if A&M can start pulling some of those recruits, Tarvin, I mean, not this year, not this year for them. But I don't know, Tarvin, 3 years from down the road, it may be a different story.
I think it's a bad time to come in to the SEC when you lost your quarterback, Tannehill. You do have a coach, though, Sumlin, I believe his name's Sumlin, from Houston. He came in, and he's the fun-and-gun type coach. But
Trey,
Texas A&M last year, their running backs were, and their offensive line is what really helped them. Mm-hmm. So how do you think he's going to come in and actually run the offense? If that's your strength, do you think he'll use that? Or do you think he'll just be fun and gun, passes all over the place like he was at Houston?
Well, you know, if he thinks the fun and gun is going to work that well in the SEC, I think he's going to have a very, very tough time in the SEC. I think he's going to be putting his quarterback on his back a lot. Because the fun and gun only works so well as basically you can keep your quarterback safe, get your receivers downfield. So that's not exactly the talent, you know, in the SEC, especially in the West with LSU, you know, Auburn and Alabama all having very, very good defenses and not putting anything past Arkansas either. So to me, he's going to have to basically play a little bit of smash mouth and to get past basically the Mendoza line in the West there.
Yeah, and they return a running back, Christine Michael. He had about 900 yards last year. They returned 6 on offense, 4 on defense, Bray, and they were 7-6 last year, 4-5 in
yeah.
the conference. That doesn't bode well. You're coming over to a division like the SEC where you're going to play 5 tough or 6 tough games now for sure, and then you have to play
yeah.
Florida and I believe there's somebody else. But let's run through their schedule real quick, and we'll do it one game at a time. They play at Louisiana Tech, their first game. Any
mm-hmm.
chance they lose that one?
No, they win that one.
Okay, second week at home, they host their first SEC game and play their first SEC game with Florida coming in.
Yeah. You know, Tarvin, this is, and I don't know how you feel, so I think this is one of those games that we'll see how good Florida is. I think Florida, if they can go in and beat them 40-3, we're like, whoa, Florida's really good. I think Texas A&M doesn't have a shot at this game. I think that we'll see how good this new coach is if he can keep this game close. But to me, Florida goes out there and they get a road win.
Yeah, and here's a tough game. I agree, 1-1 at this point. But the third week of the season, Trey, they're coming in and they're playing at SMU.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a gimme.
No, the SMU isn't the SMU of the 90s. I mean, this is a team that is actually getting better. So, for me, I think that they win this game. But, you know, this could be a game that would actually hurt Texas A&M quite a bit if they lost. So, I think I'm going to pick them to get past it, Darvin.
Okay, I'm going to go with you on this one just because they're in the SEC now. I'm just borderline on that one. Fourth game at home against South Carolina State, that's a win. So, now,
yeah.
Their schedule hasn't started yet. They're 3-1. And
mm-hmm.
I hope if you're a Texas A&M fan out there, you're not getting too excited at this 3-1 record because hell's about to come starting
yeah.
at the end of September. So, 3-1, we both agree, and I'm sure a lot of people will agree. They host Arkansas September 29th. And we've seen Texas A&M play Arkansas. They're one of those teams that A&M has played. And Arkansas
mm-hmm.
kind of handles them easily. What do you think about this season?
I think Arkansas wins this game, Tarvin. I don't think Texas A&M is ready to compete in the West yet. Like I said, down the road, yeah, I think that they may be able to do it, but this is not a team that I think is going to do well this year. So I got Arkansas beating them just like sort of always.
Okay, and then the next week, you know, at Ole Miss, and we really don't know how Ole Miss is going to be with Freeze at the head coaching position. He was the head coach at Arkansas State.
Yeah.
Any shot Ole Miss can pull this off?
Yeah, I think this is going to be actually a very competitive game. I think Texas A&M actually wins this game against Ole Miss. I'm not convinced that Ole Miss is really not the Ole Miss that we all think they are. So I'll give them their first SEC win at Ole Miss on the road, but I would not be surprised if Ole Miss wins this game. I think they're going to be very competitive with each other.
Yeah, I think Ole Miss is terrible, man, and they might be better. They might surprise you. They do have talent on their team, but it's just, there's one team that doesn't have discipline, it's them. So I'm going to give them
yeah.
a win. That makes them, what, 4-2?
Yeah, 4-2.
4-2, and then guess what? Man, this is a tough 4 games in a row. They play home against LSU, and then they play at Auburn, at Mississippi State, and then at Alabama. My
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
So what do you think of those 4 games?
You know, man, it could be 0-4, Tarvin. I'll tell you what, the Mississippi State game, I'm not convinced the Mississippi State is going to have that great a year either. But they're at Mississippi State, so I don't think they're going to win another one in Mississippi. I think if they beat Ole Miss, they lose to Mississippi State. So I'm going to have them at 4-6 at this point.
Yep, I'm going to have them losing all four of those games. And I know the Texas A&M fans are cussing me right now, but I really think, you know, at this point you have two winnable games with Sam Houston State at home and Missouri at home. I think they get both of those. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they, because they're at home, and they'll get a little bit healthier, they're going to be really beat up because they have an open date before LSU, which is good for them, but they're going to get beat up over those four games because they're on the road against basically three straight weeks. They'll get a little healthy that, you know, when they come home for Sam Houston. So I think they're healthy enough to win their last game at Missouri. So I think that puts them at a 6-6 season, Tarvin.
I totally agree. 6-6, that'll get them the Toilet Bowl in Birmingham, Alabama. So, but look, I mean, you have LSU, Trey, and then you turn around and go to an Auburn by that time in the season. You never know. They could be great. You don't know. And then at Starkville, then Tuscaloosa. All of those games, those four teams I just mentioned, are physical, very physical up front defenses. So, I don't know. Sam Houston State might get them.
I don't think so, but
I just think it's going to be a bad season. You're trying to do a transition. You're trying to get in there and just see. I think it's going to really shock Texas A&M about the defensive speeds on these teams. And I know they play Arkansas once a season sometimes, but just be able to see LSU in person and Alabama in person is just amazing when you watch those two teams play live. And I think Texas A&M is going to be in awe when they play those two.
Yeah, I think this year, I think if they win 6-6, and if they can steal a couple of these SEC road games, whether they're against Ole Miss or whatever, I think that's something for them to build on in recruiting. So for me, if I'm a Texas A&M fan, I look at this season as a step towards an SEC viable, basically, reputation. I mean, if they can win a couple of these SEC games, so they have a really tough schedule this year and they're in a really tough division, and you know, it doesn't help that LSU, Auburn, and Alabama are all going to be top 10 probably teams. You have basically the chance to either, you know, shock the world against one of them or just hold your own and keep your head above water for the season. And then you can go to each recruit's house and say, hey, look what we did. We won six games in the SEC. You know, it doesn't matter that you win all of them against the SEC. All that matters is, you broke even in the SEC West. So if you're a Texas A&M fan, I mean, I think that's what your hope has got to be, is to become viable for the next seasons.
Yeah, and if you look at their SEC record here, we're looking at their wins and losses. The only team we have them beating in the SEC is Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And no. Missouri. I don't count Missouri yet until they played a year in the SEC. So Ole Miss will be the only team they beat in the SEC, the old SEC. But, hey, let's shift gears a little bit and go into the NBA. What do you think about Jeremy Lin? Is he going to be a Nick? Or is Houston going to take?
Well, I don't see how the Knicks actually sign him now. They signed Jason Kidd, and they just signed Raymond Felton, Tarvin. I don't see how you have three point guards on that team. Yeah. I just don't see that as being a decent option at all. And I do want to mention that we had a guy on the message board. He said that basically they think Texas A&M is going to go 7-5 with 2-6 in the SEC.
How
much different? That was Brandon Solomon.
Okay. Brandon, that's not too bad, 7-5. They could squeak out a win somewhere in there, maybe at Mississippi State or Auburn. You never know. Until you see these SEC teams play a little bit, you just don't know how good anybody's going to be yet. So it's going to be interesting. 7-5 would be a successful season for Texas A&M. So, hey, was there something Jason Kidd got arrested? Was there something on that?
Yeah, you got a DUI. And, Tarvin, I think we have a caller. Do you want to go to that real quick?
They don't have their number one press, I don't think. So, caller, if you want to call, press number one. That's a 262 area code. Is that the one you're seeing?
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
He got arrested for a DUI, Tarvin, which I got to tell you, I mean – you know, I tell a lot of my young clients who are all airmen, I'm like, you know, if you want to go out and drink in the $60, you know, cab is always going to be cheaper than the DUI. I don't understand if you make millions why you can't take a cab or hire a driver. I just don't get it. So, but yeah, he got arrested and he's, you know, 38 years old and apparently starting his Knicks career off pretty badly. But with them signing Felton too, Tarvin, I think Jeremy Lin's a rocket.
Yeah, and I mean, he's not worth the money that Houston's willing to fork out. And they made it where Houston is actually, towards the end of the contract, he's going to get more money, which would cause problems with New York with the luxury tax they have. So it's over. He's going to Houston. But, you know, Houston's looking to put some butts in the seats, right?
Yeah, and, you know, Houston actually, Tarvin, is very interesting because they're actually apparently a very serious player for Dwight Howard. So, you know, Jeremy Lin with Dwight Howard, it becomes a very different team.
Yeah, and I mean, this Dwight Howard drama is still going on, and all I know is, Trey, he's not going to be playing in Orlando, is he?
No, he's not in Orlando for sure. You can forget about that. But where else he goes is going to be different, but he's definitely not in Orlando. You can forget about that if you're a Magic fan.
Honestly, why would you want Dwight Howard? I know he's good and everything, but after seeing what he's done for so long at Orlando and how he's a cancer to that team, do you really want him?
Yeah, I think you do. I think you want him pretty badly. I mean, he's the best center in the game. I mean, I think you buy into the fact that if he goes to a new place, he'll be happy and he won't be a cancer. I mean, I think that's what you got to bet on. I mean, when you have the game's best center, I mean, you're gonna put up with a little shenanigans. I mean, he hasn't always been this way. It's just this past season he's been definitely a cancer for sure.
Yeah, I think he would fit well in L.A. I think because there's somebody on that team, that's his team, that's Kobe's team. No matter how good Dwight Howard is, as long as Kobe is there, it's Kobe's team, and I think he'll accept that. But going to Houston, I mean, what is he trying to do at Houston? They're not going to be any good. You know, they're not going to be a playoff. I mean, they might make the playoffs, but they're not going to be a contender to win it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, that'll be I'm not so sure he goes to Houston either, but I'd much prefer him going to Houston than I would L.A., but I know that's because I'm a Laker hater.
Well, yeah, the Lakers will be very good next year with Nash. I know people laughed at me when I told them they might win it all with Nash, but you know, everybody's still on Oklahoma City. They're a young team. But, I mean, this has been the weirdest free agency I've ever seen in the NBA.
Yeah, it's been a wild time. I mean, a lot of weird things playing out for sure.
Yeah, and did you hear in the NCAA basketball, going from NBA, the Kansas drug ring?
No, I haven't heard about this at all.
It's like the entire basketball team. It says, prosecutors said it's about a ring that supplied about $17 million worth of high-grade drugs to customers, including marijuana to members of last year's University of Kansas basketball team. That is not good if you're Kansas, man, with the NCAA going to come down on you hard for this, especially when it's a whole team, a lack of institutional control kind of thing.
That's crazy. That's going to be a very big story.
Oh, it is. It just came out, I believe, and I was just reading on it. And the Olympic basketball is going on right now. And Calipari's coaching. What team is he coaching, actually, in the Olympic?
I didn't know he was coaching, to be honest.
I think the Dominican Republic or something. But anyway, he was coaching the other night, and Davis hit a three-pointer and just kind of put it in Calipari's face. So that was pretty funny to watch. But, you know, we're running out of time right now. And anything you want to close off, Trey?
No, just there's a lot of, be serious. And there's a lot of people who need prayers out there and, who are doing well, who are doing poorly. And just want to, hey, we're thinking about you. You know who you are. And I appreciate everybody listening.
Yeah. And again, this is, I was going to tell the listeners that, throughout, we've had four shows in July, and we've reached better numbers so far than we have in April, May, or June. So we still have four shows after this one, and I want to thank all the listeners for liking us on Facebook and for following us on Blog Talk Radio. Make sure to go out to blogtalkradio.com, and you can type in Weigh In Sports or Tarvino, T-A-R-V-I-N-O, and follow us, and you'll get live emails, updates on anything that our shows, our agendas, and everything. And Block Talk Radio Trade is a good tool to use. They talk about so many different things. If you want to learn how to fix your car, if you want to learn how to cook, I mean, whatever. There's so many different shows. So go create a free account on blogtalkradio.com and follow us for sure. And also on Twitter, Trey, you want to talk about that before we go?
Yeah, absolutely. Remember that we're on Twitter at Weigh In Sports. It's a good venue. We get a lot of our topics from Twitter because Twitter actually is a very popular thing for sports. I mean, every athlete you can think of is on Twitter. So it's good for us to not only see what the athletes are saying, but also to get a topic for the show. So remember to hit us up on Twitter, like us on Facebook. And remember, if you have something that you think is an interesting topic, just say, hey, you know, hit us on Twitter or Facebook. You know, this is pretty interesting. I'd like to talk about it. We'll bring you on the show and let you, you know, weigh in on your choice.
Yeah, and Wednesday night, I want to go ahead and tell you what we're going to talk about. We're going to break down the Michigan Wolverines. They're getting a lot of hype right now. They're actually one of the top-ranked recruiting services right now.
Yep.
Out of the services, you know, they're doing very well. They're signing a lot of four-star athletes. I don't think they really have any five-stars, but it doesn't matter. They're looking good right now, and I just want to break down their schedule, even starting out with the Alabama game. And I also want to talk about – I don't think we talked about South Carolina, have we? We were meant to. But I want to do South Carolina and Michigan. How does that sound?
Sounds perfect to me. And, of course, for all the listeners, too, we'd like to bring in a little bit of a time, you know, in case there's something breaks or something interesting happens. So, remember, you know, that's not the only things we'll talk about. So, if you have something else, let us know.
Yeah, please let us know. You can send Trey a message on Facebook. You can send me a message on Facebook or Blog Talk Radio, and we will get your topic in. If you'd like to call in, when you call in, make sure you hit number one. And, Trey, you have a great week, and kudos on the baby.
I appreciate it, Tarvin. You have a good week as well.
All right, see you guys.
Bye-bye.